Hi, welcome to episode 17 of the Woke-ish podcast. This is Ebony.
And this is Zalma.
And this week, because we are celebrating the 4th of July, or I mean, I guess if you are celebrating the 4th of July, the 4th of July is coming.
Yes.
And we will be talking about our nation's independence and what that means for us. And we'll be talking about freedom and whether or not we have it, and whether or not our respective communities have it, etc. But before we get there, we will start with our shout out segment.
Yes. And so our first shout out goes to Tiffany Caban. She's a queer Latina woman. Some people ask me what queer means, and I think that's how she identifies. So she could either be lesbian, bisexual, some sort of non-heterosexual. But she's identifying as queer, so that's the term that I'm going to use to refer to her. And she's Latina. And so she's the newly elected Democratic primary winner for the district attorney in Queens, New York. So for 28 years, Richard Brown was the Queens district attorney. He was known for sending a lot of people who committed misdemeanors to jail. And that's like small crimes. So she is a 31-year-old former public defender who pledged to eliminate cash bail and stop prosecuting minor crimes. She considers herself a democratic socialist, and she also had a grassroots campaign. So it means she didn't take money from any big donor. She mostly got her money from people like you and me just contributing to her campaign. She was endorsed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren. So that kind of gave her a boost by people outside of New York to kind of, she kind of became famous. And although she won the primary for district attorney, she still needs to win the general election. But historically, the Democratic candidate usually wins in Queens. So it's just, they're just kind of saying that this is another example of someone who's able to, like AOC, Alexandria, kind of, one, have a grassroots campaign that's successful, two, be a representative from the community that is representative of the community, because for a long time they were saying that there's just been like mostly white people representing these majority minority communities. And the fact that she's so liberal, and people, she was saying that people were saying she wasn't going to win, and she just said, you know, if Alexandria can do it, then so can I. So I think that's pretty cool, especially like she's a public defender who basically is saying, I'm going to reform the criminal justice system here in Queens. And she says that, you know, she wants to, she was calling out Rikers and saying that she just wants to change everything up. And so I don't know how much can be changed by one person, but I think that district attorneys have a lot of power. They have a lot of power in who to prosecute, which cases to prosecute, how much, like, and so it was one of those positions that I didn't know was an elected position. And so whenever we get upset that, for example, a police officer isn't charged, that's a district attorney's choice. And so I think that it's really important for us to pay attention when people are running for these positions like district attorney, because we need representation all over the place. And so, you know, shout out to Queens for the people coming out, coming through. Shout out to Tiffany for, you know, putting herself out there and just, you know, trying and saying, I might not be successful, but I'm gonna try. And she, you know, she won the primary. So hopefully we'll see how she does in the general election, but everyone's projecting her to win that as well.
Shout out to her. This is something that we've been like, I feel like for the last, I don't know, not full year of the podcast, but I think that there was, I think it was the year that we had Alan on, or the episode that we had Alan on, where he told us about the whole district attorney thing. And I was like, you mean to tell me this whole time we could be electing these people? But yeah, so like since then, I feel like we've been calling for that. And so seeing more of this, and you know, just raising more awareness about the fact that it is an elected position.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, people just don't know about that. Because otherwise, why would we complain about it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's awesome. Hopefully there will be more where that came from.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, well, it was nice to have a good shout out for an elected position.
Yeah.
And then our second shout out goes to, so do you say Kamala or Kamala?
I say Kamala.
I've heard both ways.
I don't know. I don't even know.
I say Kamala too. I know. I was just thinking that. Yeah. Well, we'll go with Kamala. Yeah. So Kamala Harris's campaign, if you don't know, she is a, not only a, she's a senator. Mm-hmm. She said, yeah. She's also running for president.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you guys saw the two-night presidential or two-night Democratic debates, but she was in night two, and she apparently won approval from many after her performance in her first debate, because she raised $2 million 24 hours after the debate. Her approval rating increased after the debate, while Joe Biden, who she kind of held accountable, suffered a decrease. And so there was a, and you might have seen this on social media, but she kind of called him out for supporting that busing shouldn't be mandated. Mm-hmm. And Joe Biden was kind of trying to tiptoe around the fact and saying that, no, I wasn't against busing. I was just against, like, that being a federal enforcement. It should be a local decision. And she was just kind of like, no, my point is, like, busing is good, and the fact that you were against any implementation of that is bad. And I actually was I was bused.
Yeah.
And so I think that, and the way that she just wouldn't let him just get away with it,
yeah,
get away with just saying, oh, the semantics of, oh, no, I was saying not federal, but it could still be done, yeah, just can't be enforced.
And what typically happens when we leave things up to local officials? Nothing.
Well, yeah, and I don't know.
Discrimination, yeah, racism, like, all of those things happen.
So yeah. And so the way that she, and there's another famous kind of part of the debate where she kind of, like, told everyone, like, stop, you know, stop throwing food at each other and talk about the food on the table.
Yeah.
She just, like, carried herself really well, because there are so many people and so many people trying to speak and so many ideas being thrown out there. And so, you know, shout out to her. Even if you don't support her as presidential candidate, like, it's impressive to get $2 million in 24 hours, especially for a woman, especially for a woman of color.
Yeah.
And so shout out to her campaign, and, you know, whatever outcome is, she's definitely making a trail, opening doors for future women and women of color to be able to get further and further in the road to president.
Yeah.
So, you know, shout out to her, and then, you know, we'll definitely keep everything updated and in terms of the road to the 2020 elections, but it's looking really crazy. And, you know, like, yeah, and
the Real Housewives reunion, oh my god, those debates,
it's hard to know who's actually going to be our candidate, but yeah, we'll keep you guys updated.
Yeah, good luck to them, because banking on Americans, good lord. And then our last shout out goes to the city of Las Vegas, which is in Nevada. Which has announced that they will now allow drivers to pay parking tickets by donating school supplies. In a unanimous vote, the Las Vegas City Council decided to allow people, drivers who get tickets, to settle their tickets they receive from June 2019 to July 2019 by making a donation that must be of or equal to greater value of their fine. So supplies must be dropped off at the Las Vegas Parking Services offices within 30 days of the ticket with a receipt of purchase. So the reason for this is that often when money for school supplies runs short, so like from the district, teachers and students often make up the difference. So apparently during the 2014-2015 school year, 94% of public school teachers in the United States reported buying supplies with their own money without ever being reimbursed, according to the New York Times. So all the donations from the parking tickets will be given to the nonprofit that provides school supplies to public school teachers in Southern Nevada. And if you're out there and you're considering, if you're out there and you're living in Vegas and you're considering donating, eligible donations include pencils, pens, erasers, index cards, paper towels, disinfectant wipes, cardstock, storage bins, pencil sharpeners, rulers, and sticky notes. So shout out to the city for, in my opinion, you know, taking initiative and doing something that, in all honesty, the federal government should be doing, but that's neither here nor there. We just need kids to have supplies, and and the city has decided to do that. So we appreciate that, and shout out to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So that wraps up our shout out segment, and now we'll jump into our In the Know segment. Extra, read all about it. Okay, so now for our In the Know segment.
Yes, so our first story is like, so sometimes I try to look for not, I think feel like last week it was really, really heavy talking about Sudan and Hong Kong. So I wanted a story that was still something that I found relevant and important to me, but also just kind of like not so serious.
Yeah.
And so I found
found it.
Yeah. Apparently there are calls to end the use of models with fake pregnancy bumps for photo shoots involving maternity clothes. And so Arabella Chi, a reality star, is highlighting how companies hire models to wear prosthetic baby bumps to sell maternity clothes. So everyone, because she's like Instagram famous.
Yeah.
So and I guess she's European, I think. And oh, so, yeah, you know her?
Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah, that's why I didn't know her either. She's like Instagram famous in Europe, and she's in reality TV there. And so apparently, like, everyone knows she's not pregnant.
Yeah.
And you can go on her Instagram and see that she's not pregnant.
Yeah.
But she just, you know, was promoting how she was featured by this company, and she is pregnant in this photo shoot, and people were like, oh wait, so these girls aren't, or these women aren't pregnant. And so that led a lot of people, like, you know, articles started coming out kind of highlighting that, yes, in fact, some of the women, and I don't know how many, but some of the women that they hire to model maternity clothes are actually wearing prosthetic baby bumps. And
it's like, why do we have to go that far?
I know. And so, okay, so these companies are saying that this is actually to help the pregnant women, because the photo shoots might be too long, and they don't want to have pregnant women go through that much time and work. Mm-hmm. But other people are saying that what that's doing is actually it's presenting this fake reality about what a pregnant woman's body looks like. And I agree with that, because when I was pregnant and I was looking at maternity clothes, I would look at some of these women, I would be like, wow, she looks really great. Like, she doesn't, all that is different is her stomach. When you're pregnant, your arms and your legs and your feet like swell up.
Yeah.
Even your face can swell up.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when I would see women, I would just be like, wow, like, that's crazy how good they look for pregnancy. And you can't help but to compare yourself and to say like, wow, like, I wonder what I look like. Why don't I look like that? Or even, you know, I ordered a dress and the dress on the model looked one way, and then I got it and now my body looked a different way. And I was like, oh, my chest, it doesn't, like, everything is so different that you just think like, oh, it's me. Like, I just don't look good in this. And you realize now, oh, she looks good in it because she's like, doesn't have a baby growing inside her. And I do. And so she's just wearing this really nicely round bump.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I think that, you know, although I if it's true that they don't want to put all this pressure on a pregnant woman, then, like, get shorter hours. Like, I'm sorry, you're going to just have to, it's going to be a little more expensive. Yeah, or get more women and pay them less.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think it's healthy for this illusion of models just pretending to be pregnant, causing not only pregnant women, but also little girls and teenagers seeing like, oh, if I don't look like that, then I'm not good enough. And so I don't know. I think it's kind of funny because I'm sure in her mind she was like, I'm promoting myself. Yeah,
she thought it was good.
Yeah, and it turned
off those comments.
Yeah, and it turned out people were like, this is so messed up. Like, how? I didn't even know this was a thing.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, I didn't either. I wouldn't even think that they wouldn't be pregnant. Yeah. That they would be fake.
Yeah, I mean, I've never, like, I've usually when I'm shopping for clothes online, I, like, filter out the maternity stuff. Mm. But, I mean, it never would have occurred to me that, but now, that, like, now hearing you say it and thinking about some of those pictures, mm-hmm. like, you're right. Like, everything about them looks not pregnant.
Yeah. Other than their stomach. Yeah, and it's just, like, how does she look like that? Yeah. And then you have unrealistic expectations about how clothes look like on mm-hmm. you, and so you don't feel good in your clothes. And I feel that women should highlight what it really, because one of the things I learned about women's bodies being pregnant is that we don't know a lot about it, and that's yeah. because we are very, our society is very like shameful when it comes to menstruation, when it comes to women having sex, and when it comes to like the truth about pregnancy, other than just like, oh, the glow yeah. and you know, the cute little bump, and it's like, no, like your legs swell so much mm-hmm. and your arms
yeah, and you
swell.
You never know that by looking at
yeah
people.
Yeah, everything swells. Your lips swell, your cheeks yeah. swell, your neck swells, like everything swells, and it's because something great is happening. But that stuff we don't learn about when we have reality TV stars, you know, just modeling these maternity clothes. Mm. So, you know, for if anything, this can, you know, be hopefully you guys listening out there can learn something I did. And it's like, okay, you just can't trust like what you see yeah. with your eyes. Yeah. And then always know that when you're comparing yourself to, it's probably fake, whether it's yeah. on Instagram, whether it's on a catalog, whether it's on a website, like everything has been tweaked and filtered and yeah. edited in a way that you just can't, we just have to train ourselves to not go to the, oh, why don't I look like that? Yeah. And I hope I look like that. And if I don't look like that, then what does this mean?
Yeah, because yeah. the people, I mean, and then also it's like they filter things so much and like edit things so much that even the people in the pictures don't look like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so it's like there are these really unrealistic, I mean, like unhuman.
Yeah.
Inhuman, is that a word?
Inhuman.
Inhuman?
I think it's unhuman.
Goal, you have these goals that are not even human, like they're not mm-hmm. even attainable, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's crazy that like at every stage of a woman's life, the beauty industry is constantly pumping our heads full of like unattainable goals.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's like all through, like through your whole life, through the whole life course, you're old and now they're telling you what color your hair is supposed to be, what your wrinkles are supposed to look like. And it's like, no, everybody, I mean, unless you're getting your face shot full of Botox constantly, like you're gonna age.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just, you know, yeah. And then, I mean, I guess there's some stuff for men, but not to the extent of like yeah. women, you know.
Yeah.
You got like the stuff about balding and all of that, but
yeah.
I mean, it is. I don't know. Weird stuff. That's crazy. You learn something new every day.
I know. Yeah. I definitely did. And then our second story is kind of a positive to a very negative, mm-hmm. in my opinion, thing. So this week, a federal judge ruled against border wall construction with military funds from the Trump administration. So if you guys can recall, you can't go anywhere without Trump reminding us that he's going to build this wall. So he's been trying to figure out where to get the money to build this wall, because Congress basically said, we're not giving you the money to build this wall, because yeah. he wants $2.5
billion. Billion dollars.
Yes. And so he's trying to kind of like finesse his way into just either, you know, one of the ways he did it was by saying, oh, this is a national security threat, so we need emergency money for this. Like, he tries to find different ways to pay for this wall, because that is what his campaign depends on, yeah. And so the most recent thing he was doing is, because he was saying that it was a threat to the domestic safety of our country, mm-hmm. that allowed him to use military funds. And so a federal judge in California blocked the Trump administration from using the $2.5 billion for military funding to build his wall. The judge ruled that Congress has absolute control over federal money, and Trump is trying to circumvent the system of checks and balances that we have. And so if you guys can remember, you know, we have the executive branch, which is the president, we have Congress, and then we have the Supreme Court. So each of those three kind of parts that make up our government and our country, are kind of the basis of our country, are supposed to keep each other in check so that no one part is just kind of like taking control. Yeah. And so if Congress tells you that you can't use money for this, then Trump doesn't give Trump the authority to just say, I'm going to use it anyway. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, the court was able to stop Trump from trying to do that. But of course, the Trump administration is not having it. They tried to argue that Congress never denied funding from the wall, although if you remember, that's why we had the longest government shutdown in our country's history. Trump is appealing the decision, and it could be heard as early as within the coming weeks. So Trump is just very determined to have his wall built, and he's just trying to, I read that they were like hiring lawyers just to figure out how to get his wall. And that's what we're spending our money on. Like, not on, you know, veteran affairs or on having an ambassador to the United Nations or on having so many different positions that have yet to be filled since 2 years that he's been president. Mm-hmm. But so it's kind of a plus because it just kind of gives you faith that, you know, our system isn't completely broken. Yeah, like, there's some accountability. Yeah. Like, Trump just can't, even though it may seem like his base is just, it's like, how did so many people still support him? It's like, okay, but there's still balances in check, and there's still things that, you know, sometimes, and there's still people working hard. And thankfully, organizations like the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, are continuing to, like, sue Trump and to make his administration and to make sure that he doesn't get away with things like this. And thankfully, we have judges in states like California that are, like, able to, you know, take those cases and to rule against them. And, you know, although Trump has now put two people in the Supreme Court, there are federal judges that have been placed by other presidents that do not have any loyalty to Trump and are really just, like, not just trying to win favor with him and do whatever he says. And so, you know,
it's like
little win.
And the craziest part is that he's not doing this because he cares or is invested in this.
Yeah.
Like, this is all because he wants to be reelected. Yeah. And it's like, okay, how can I? This is the one thing that I have been talking endlessly about, and my base is looking at me like, what are you going to do? What are you going to get done?
Yeah.
That is the only reason. Like, it just. Yeah. And then to have been a year and a half ago, to have been so passionate about these NFL players kneeling for the flag, but then you want to take $2.5 billion,
for a wall,
but you care about the military,
veterans, you have veterans.
It's like these two things are antithetical. Like, they should not. They don't make sense together. And yet, when he says stuff like this, his base believes it.
Yeah,
like, oh yeah, take the money from the military to build the wall.
Yeah.
But weren't you guys just talking about how much you care about the military and demanding that football players stand for the flag because of the loyalty to your military?
Yeah.
Well, like, it's so stupid.
It is. That's why I'm glad that it's like, okay, not everyone's crazy.
Yeah.
There are people who see.
Thank God.
Pass. And the funniest part was how he was trying to claim. He's rewriting history. And I was reading this article, and it was like the court argued that it was something funny. It was like super shady. Like, the court argued that they could not avoid the reality that happened last year. Kind of saying, like, everyone saw this happen, so you saying it didn't doesn't mean, like, it didn't happen.
People were protesting.
Yeah, it's like
there
we were there.
That did not get paid.
It's
for a month.
Yes.
Like, what are you talking about? It's
crazy. He really, I mean, because he's gotten away with doing that, where he just says things enough times that people just
forget.
And that's what dictators in history have done.
Yeah.
Stalin and Hitler and Mussolini, just like saying things over and over again, and then they become true.
Yeah. But I mean, that happened. I mean, those kinds of things happen in our society every day.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I mean, think about everything that the police have said that they didn't do, and then it's like, boom, videotape, you did it.
Yeah, or Kim Kardashian saying that she didn't have surgery.
It's like,
she says it
there's
so many
a before
times.
And after picture. People,
yeah,
everybody with these fake asses has been saying that. Like, what are you talking about? It just grew overnight.
No.
But yeah, and then he, like, it's like Trump, you tweet everything. We've got all the tweets to like to throw back in your face. I don't.
No, I know.
Crazy.
He is crazy.
Okay, and then our last in the know topic is about a 27-year-old woman from Birmingham, Alabama, named Marche Jones, who has been indicted on manslaughter charges for the death of her unborn daughter. And so Alabama is one of the 38 states with a fetal homicide law, which allows charges to be brought when a fetus is killed. Under the state law, and I quote, an unborn child in utero at any stage of development, regardless of viability, counts as a person for prosecution purposes, end quote. So although she didn't cause the death of her baby necessarily, authorities say that she caused the dispute, which ultimately led to her being shot in the stomach, which killed her unborn child. So this all stems from the concept of fetal personhood, which comes out of the anti-abortion movement, which, I mean, you know, everybody knows has been kind of revitalized as of late. And there are a lot of southern states that are kind of pushing to ban abortion, like, just outright. But this has worked for years to change... They've been working for years to change the word person in state law to include a fertilized egg, embryo, or fetus. So the idea is that if a fetus is considered a person, abortion at all stages of pregnancy can more easily be outlawed. But these measures have had another effect, which is criminalizing women who lose pregnancies, no matter the cause. And so I kind of, you know, my view on this is that I feel, and I think, you know, my view on this is a pretty radical one, but we've seen, you know, how this sort of thing, like things that are not racist on the face kind of have racial coding and then ultimately impact people of color and specifically poor people of color more harshly. And so I think that this is gonna kind of function as a conduit for racialized mass incarceration, the same way that like the three strike rule did, the same way that the war on drugs did, where the people that are affected the most are poor people and poor people of color. And then I think that you know, we're going to see that the same sort of thing is going to play out with poor women of color who are pregnant and are seeking, or it would have been in the past, a legal means to abortion. And now, because it's being, you know, outlawed in so many states, you know, they're going to have to hopefully not take other measures. But again, we have seen that that is what tends to happen when there's no access to abortion, that people, you know, go to like back alleys and you know, like just hole in the wall places that can ultimately lead to death and just all kinds of other complications. So yeah, I mean, I feel like Marche Jones is just one, sadly, of many women that will ultimately like be victim to these like strict abortion laws.
Yeah.
I mean, it sucks. There are a lot of, she has a lot of lawyers backing her and supporting her. So hopefully they're able to get these charges dropped, but it's just like manslaughter when you didn't do it.
Like, I mean, Reaper, like, she lost her child.
Yeah, it's like she's already traumatized.
There's a punishment in that she lost her child for something, even if people are like, oh, but she needs to take a call. It's like, in her mind, it doesn't matter if we tell her you go to jail because you killed your child. In her, I know so many women that lose a child and say, oh, it's because I ran too much.
Yeah.
Oh, it's because I didn't have a good diet. It's because I was too stressed. It's because, and they, it's like, that's just, it's so they just human ourselves. Nature to say, oh, this is, it was my fault. This is what I did. So it's like, it's not like she, what did she get away with? She lost a child. It's not like she was having, I don't know. And so a part of me is like, this is just punishment on top of punishment because she is going through it right now. And the last thing that she needs is to be like prosecuted by, where is she? Alabama?
Yeah.
Be prosecuted by Alabama for like participating in the murder of her child. And so, I mean, it's just crazy the shit the stuff that we like actually care about, because there have been so many times where we have seen police officers or like kill people and yet we don't as outraged about a police officer killing a 14-year-old boy as we are about a woman who
was shot like she was shot. Like it's like that. First of all, are we not considering that trauma? She was shot.
Yeah,
she lost her baby. And now she's in jail.
Yeah.
Awaiting, like, what? This is her fate. Like, she could potentially be, like, so it's like, all of, even if the charges are dropped, she's been traumatized enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this is just, and then at 27, like, I couldn't imagine going through that right now. Like, what?
Yeah. Especially after a loss.
It's too much, man. It's too much.
Well, I'm glad there are people in her corner. And, you know, it just kind of shows you that people who have an agenda of getting rid of the abortion laws don't really care about who gets caught in the crossfire. And I don't really think that they give a shit about her dead child. Yeah. What they care about is this case, if it wins, would help me stop, you know,
solidify whatever
my move. Yeah, my motive. What's the movement?
What is the purpose of the movement? Like, I don't get it. Like, what gratification are they getting?
I don't know. We need to have an episode on that and like ask someone who.
Yeah, if there are any conservatives listening, you want to call in or you know some conservatives.
Oh, I know a lot of conservatives.
Oh yeah, because like I just really want to know, like, what is it that you get from this?
I told you. I mean, there are people who believe that you hear people say this, but there are people who take it literally, you know, that everything you do on earth will be accounted for in heaven.
Yeah.
And so there are people who believe that we get rewarded based on what we did in heaven. And so if you do more good in heaven, you get a bigger bigger reward in heaven. So if you were a person who actually was able to save, quote unquote, so many lives, Jesus is going to reward you so greatly once you get to heaven.
But isn't that selfish?
Yeah. And
I don't actually care.
Heaven isn't about...
Yeah, it's like I don't even care about the people or actually doing good. I just want to rack up points so that Jesus will reward me.
I think maybe some people really, really, really believe that they want to save these babies' lives. But I think that there's a bigger part of people who just want to win, or who just wants other people not to win. Like, it just becomes about winning or not, or about recognition or not, or about my party succeeding or not, or and then I think that maybe we should devote an episode to having people just come on and talk about their beliefs and why they hold them so strongly.
Because I just want to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't yell at you. I play pretty nice with people on the other side of the aisle. I just want to know, like, how you think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't get it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that wraps up our In the Know segment, and now we will dive into our What's Being Slept On segment.
So I strongly suggest that you wake the fuck up.
Okay, so now for our What's Being Slept On topic. So someone thought that it would be really fitting for us to talk about, you know, the 4th of July and it being Independence Day, especially given kind of how, like, the state of our nation right now, in that it's, like, so polarized and, like, you know, what it even means to be, quote-unquote, American seems to be so hot, like, such a hot topic right now, and kind of arises, I think, a lot, provokes a lot of, like, emotion and stuff like that. Because we have, you know, having a president right now that's constantly, like, chanting America first and make America great again. Like, do we even have a good sense of what that means? Like, what is it that we're, like, what's the America that he's referencing? What are we working toward? If we're talking about, you know, freedom and justice for all, what does that look like? Who benefits from that? But yeah, so we're just gonna have a discussion about what Independence Day really means for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so by the time you hear this,
it'll be the 4th of July. On your holiday.
Yeah, and so Ebony and I were talking about how, for us, the 4th of July has not really been about celebrating the literal freedom from, and, you know, I'm from Mexico, and so we have Mexico Independence Day in September, and, like, you celebrate freedom from, you know, the colonized power of Spain. And then my friends who are from Southern American countries, and they celebrate the freedom of their countries from the colonized powers. But in the U.S., on July 4th, for me, it was always just about, like, family and about fireworks and about, you know, my mom works in a catering company, and so she usually has to work a July 4th party, so we didn't really get to do stuff with family. And I have a brother who works in retail. July 4th is a big day because it's a lot of July 4th sales. I used to be a waitress. That was a big day too, because people want to go to restaurants. So for a long time, July 4th was just, you know, a day where it was like half, to me it meant halfway through summer.
Yeah.
But now that, you know, thinking about this episode, and it's just kind of like we wanted to take a moment to kind of talk about, is what does that mean that for us we don't really, like, is that, do you think that's like a our generation thing? Do you think it's like a we're not white thing? Do you think it's like where academic people think? So
I mean, because before I was, even before being an academic, or like when I was young, you know, like we, 4th of July was really big for my family. Because we went and got all the illegal fireworks, and, like, I have tons of cousins, so we all just came together at my grandma's house. She cooked. My dad and uncles barbecued. We swam in the pool, and then we waited till, like, we got there really early, and then we waited till night and started doing fireworks. And that was, like, you know, it was, like, a big thing. Like, everybody came over. But I never once thought about it as, like, and we never talked about it. Like, oh, this is our nation's independence. Like, we never even referred to it as Independence Day. It was always the 4th of July. The only time I really ever said Independence Day was referencing that Will Smith movie. Like, it wasn't like, you know, so I guess that's pretty much the case for, like, all of these kind of like Veterans Day, Memorial Day, Labor Day. Like, it was always kind of about family. And I think that it's because, well, one, other than my grandfather, and he passed when I was really, really young, we didn't have any vets in our family. So it was never really a topic of discussion. And so I didn't really grow up with, like, a military kind of, you know, presence or influence like that. And we also, so for, like, Black people, we have Juneteenth. And so there's, like, a big celebration about that, and that's more so a conversation about freedom. And I think it's because we kind of see, I mean, I guess if there ever does come a day where, there it's like equal for black and white folks, maybe we would celebrate, maybe they would kind of become conflated because they're only like 2 weeks apart, Juneteenth and the 4th. But I think that that's kind of seen more so as like, oh, this is our independence. And so it's a little bit, yeah, I don't know. So it does, sadly, other than family, it doesn't really mean a whole lot to me. Because, like, again, going back to the question about, like, what is freedom? What is independence? What is, you know, what is it that we're actually celebrating? What are we thinking about? What are we, like, commemorating and all that? Like, I don't feel like, oh my gosh, thank God, British, like, the Britain let us go. Like, you know, like, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no. Yeah, and while, you know, Edmund and I, when we were talking about kind of what we wanted to go over in this part, because in my life, I've just, due to my different backgrounds, I've just been exposed to so many people on the political spectrum all across the board. Mm-hmm. And so I only because of that, the biggest thing I've learned is, and I've referenced this point again and again throughout our episodes, is that, you know, I say people live in different Americas. Mm-hmm. And so I learned through other people and seeing this country and their experience of this country from their perspective, that a part of me can understand why they celebrate the way that they do and how July 4th can be a patriotic day about, God, you know, I'm so proud to be part of this country. And so I have friends I grew up with that are in the military. Because I'm Hispanic, and, you know, the educational attainment of Hispanic people is really low. And so we're more likely to go to the military. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my male friends who I grew up with, you know, joined the military. And so I saw how their perspective about this country changed. And these are people whose parents were immigrants.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
And so they... And a part of me, it wasn't until I saw, so, you know, I have friends who, you know, I know this one guy who did like 2 to 3 tours, and I saw the change of just like, you know, and not like, I personally have never seen him like, you know, get super violent and get, you know, how some people talk about the experience with PTSD. Yeah. But I did see this more aggressive stance on, you will not disrespect this country. Mm. And it's only after, and you know, I became so liberal after, where it was sometimes really hard to have conversations with people about my stance on, you know, we had a whole conversation about whether there really is racial segregation in this country. And he would always go back to like, well, no, because the military is not a place where it's segregated. There's no black, there's no brown, there's just green. And it was just kind of like, but I have to see it from his experience. And from his experience where he's had friends die, he's had to be around. I mean, they still have friends where they get together like every once in a while to remember the people who've died. And it's people our age who've died. Yeah. And so, and he's... And then, you know, the biggest thing I learned from him is you never ask someone, so did you kill anyone?
Yeah.
So what did you do? What's the worst thing you've done? Mm-hmm. And through his experience, there was just this sort of respect for, I would never think to put my life at risk for anyone, whether it be my country. I learned so much through them. And so I got this sort of, I can understand, for people who have the military perspective of respect the military, don't dare say anything bad about this country, don't dare, you know, disrespect the flag. And I think some people twist that, and, you know, the Trump administration has definitely taken people who actually have such emotional attachment to this, they've taken advantage of that. Mm-hmm. But I can understand from their perspective why they say this country's the greatest country in the world. And for you to say that it's not is disrespecting my friend who I saw die.
But I don't understand why those things have to be so intertwined and like conflated. Why can't I have respect for the military? Because I do think it's, I mean, that's like the most selfless thing that you can do. Right. And so I have respect for the military and recognize that tons and tons of people die. Right. And it's awful. But I can also recognize that the country has a ways to go in how it treats its citizens, because they're not all treated equally. Like, ultimately, that's the basis of the argument. It's not like, oh, this country sucks for everyone.
Yeah.
No, like, there are some people in the country that are treated better, you know? And so, I mean, and I also don't, like, I haven't lived in other countries for long enough to argue about what the experience is like to live there. But I know several immigrants that miss their home countries and love it to death. So it's not like, you know, we can't sit here and argue that, like, oh, America is the best of the best, better than every other country when we've never lived there. And I mean, most countries have an active military that also motivates the same level of, like, whatever, like, love and, you know, what a passion for their country. So it's like, it's not, we can't act like our military is completely different from every other. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing and putting their lives at risk and all of that is different from every other country's military. I mean, even in some of these other countries, they have civilians that do, that go out and, because they don't have an active military, go out and do, you know, the work of the military. But, you know, you can also acknowledge the faults of the government. And I don't think that those two things are, those two things have to be intertwined. Like, we can recognize, two things can be true, you know? Yeah. And I also don't understand the, like, that, like, if you are, like, for instance, kneeling for the flag, that that is disrespectful to the military. Like, I mean, there are vets that have kneeled for the flag.
Yeah, and that's totally, so, I think, Trump just taking, or some people
taking
advantage of people who say, like, I respect the flag, to be like, oh, well, you're disrespecting that. And I don't know, I always like to remember, you know, they just had such a different experience.
Yeah.
It's completely, and the military, they train you.
Yeah, it's to, like, a, I don't want to say brainwashing.
Yeah, no, they rewire you in a way so that you can do the things that you have to do to not die.
Yes. And to not see, because, so, combat is a part of, not everybody, right, but there are a lot of folks that are on the front line. Mm-hmm. And so we all know that there are some factions of the military that have to kill people, right? And so you, as a you may not, as a civilian, enter the military thinking that you are willing to kill someone, to kill potentially an innocent person. But then there's some process that they undergo before they get over there that allows them to do that, you know? So whatever that process is, that, like you're saying, there's some kind of rewiring, and we have to know that, right? Because, like, we do know. Like, I have friends that have been in the military, and what I think that before they had gone, that they would be willing to kill someone, even after they'd gone, you know, based on what I know of them, what I think that they would be willing to just kill somebody on the street, probably not. But when you're at war, like, you know, there's a switch that goes off.
Yeah, and there's no middle ground. It's like, I mean, you're taught to, if your commander tells you, or, like, the commander of chief, if President Trump tells you to do something, even if you disagree, you do it. And that's just not something that, you know, that I can understand.
Yeah. Or, like, your supervisor.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, we have supervisors.
Yeah. It's just, and so I think that when I think about those things as a whole, I can kind of see why, in a world where there's no gray, there's just yes, no, left, right. You're either for the U.S. or you're not, and there's no gray. And it's kind of those things of, even if you think badly, you don't say it.
Yeah.
And so that experience with the military people that I know, it's given me some sort of insight as to people who think, who are so against speaking negatively about, and there are a lot of vets who are totally fine and are totally, you know, supportive of people being vocal and protesting, but I just, the people that I know are very, just kind of, very vocal in how they feel about, you know, quote-unquote snowflakes and quote-unquote liberals, and so that's allowed me to have that perspective. And then, you know, I always joke that I'm a recovering Republican. So I was a Republican.
You should get that on
your shirt. Yeah, so I was a Republican for a long time. And the biggest thing for me for being a Republican was abortion.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I was a Republican. And so I understand. And it's because I was raised in a very religious household, and I went to a private Baptist university where every week I had to go to church, and then I did church on weekends, and then I taught, you know, Sunday school, and then I went and took college level classes on ethics and on the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so I was taught like why this is something that we believe, and so I can understand people who say that, you know, who have a very conservative view and who also think that this is the greatest country,
yeah,
and that you should be so happy to be here, mm-hmm, and you should be blessed to be here, and God is very central to what our country is, and without God our country is going to not be successful, and if we don't have God, then, and the Christian God, then we are going to go down a path where in the Bible it has shown us that we're just going to get attacked and bad things will happen, because if you're right with God, then only good things will happen. But if you're wrong, if the bad things happen to you, that means that you're not right with God. Mm-hmm. So that's, I've been around people like that my whole life. And I was one of those people. And so I understand that also from their perspective, why God and God bless America, like not saying God bless America in the flag is so just threatening to your the core of this country, because your ultimate goal is you were chosen to be a warrior for God, and that means that you have a responsibility to make sure that the beliefs of this God is never changed. Mm-hmm. So I can understand that perspective.
This sounds like a dictatorship. Like,
I mean, I think that, so what they pull from is like instances in the Bible where, so Judaism in the Bible didn't start when the world was made. And Christianity, some people argue, come from Judaism. And so there have been times where in the Bible God tells people, like, you are like Jewish or you are Christian. Do not, you know, kind of take the beliefs of the pagans or take the religious beliefs of these other people, because you're supposed to stay pure, you're supposed to stay like with your beliefs. And I think that at that time, like, that made sense. Mm-hmm. But then people take what the Bible says thousands of years ago to mean the same today. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, that's where I no longer believe that we have to live our lives in that way where we're like, let me not be contaminated by other people. I think that was, and this is super like, this is just me. This is not, I'm not saying that this is what Christians believe or this is what Baptists believe. This is just me. Like, I think that was just a lesson, like God teaching them, can you obey me? Mm-hmm. And so the lesson will be, don't be with these people, because I'm teaching you obedience, because this is new. This is a new religion, and you have to learn to trust me, and I have to learn that you will be loyal to me, and this is how that's going to happen. But do I think that that meant forever? Mm-hmm. No. But that's me.
Yeah.
And so there are people who don't believe that, who really do believe, I can't, you know, be, I'm not, and then people say this all the time, I'm in the world, but not of this world. So they really see an us against them, you against me. And so that, with that understanding, I can see why they see liberals as kind of these people who are attacking the very core of who they are and are trying to move them, and you are being tested by God. And so if they're just going to come at you and come at you and come at you, and it's your job to keep fighting and to keep fighting and to keep fighting until you win. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you see these people very, you know, these people just like, oh no, we have to raise money for this and do this and these laws and do this. Like, it's just like they are relentless in their goal, and it's like, why is this goal so important? And that's, yeah, because it's such a central, abortion to them is so central, because to them it's like, this is what keeps me different from you. Like, this is my core belief, that that could be a Christian person, and you're murdering a Christian person, and that's not okay with God.
Oh, that this baby could grow into a Christian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because your job is to make as many people Christian as you can. Yeah. Well, if you believe in like a evangelical, which is how I was raised, so if you believe that your job is to convert as many people, which I did believe, and I took that very seriously, and I would spend all my time, I would go to people at gas stations and like be that person handing out stuff and, you know, be like, okay, I got three people today. Yeah. I prayed with three people today.
Yeah.
And so if you believe that, then the thought of so many quote unquote babies dying every year, you're like, look at all these Christians that we're losing. Yeah. Like,
okay,
that all makes, their souls. I can see that. And so, yeah. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, if you speak their language and see it from their perspective, then you can say, I understand why it's so important for them for this not to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they do the other way, where they're just kind of like, okay,
no,
take myself out of this religious belief. If this were just about, I can't have a child who's going to die 2 hours after he's born. I just can't take it. I don't want to do this, but it's not fair for me or the child. And I still believe the child will go to heaven. Like, these people, I just think it's hard for both people to kind of reach across the aisle. And a lot of that is because we're not talking to each other.
I think that I get that, right? But the appeal to me of being liberal or whatever, I don't know, the word is getting so convoluted, but being Democrat and having liberal ideology is that regardless of what I think is right or wrong, to each his own. To each is her own. You know, so it's like, so I grew up Baptist Christian, right? We never talked explicitly about abortion. Like, it was kind of like, you know what the Bible says, you do your thing in your personal kind of situation. We never talked about things like premarital sex. People, you know, like, pastors didn't talk about people in the congregation that they knew weren't married but were living together or sleeping together or having a baby. Like, it was like those kinds of things were not really discussed. So I don't know if maybe that's why I also don't, like, even what you're saying is not, like, necessarily speaking to, like, a past version or former version of me. Like, I never, and we had an episode on the Gosnell, Dr. Gosnell or whatever, and it wasn't until that movie that I was like, oh, maybe I'm conflicted about this, you know? Because before that, I was like, oh, like, I may not have an abortion. Like, I know how I personally feel about it, but I don't know the experience of Susie and Mary and whoever else, you know, that may feel like they need an abortion. So who am I, who has not walked in their shoes, to dictate what they can or cannot do?
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of been my view on pretty much everything. Like, you know, whether or not when it comes to any movement, like, I am not an immigrant. I am not, you know, queer, LGBTQ. I am not, you know, there's so many things that I am not, and yet I feel like I want to advocate for these folks because I do not walk in your shoes. Who am I to say what is wrong or right, you know? But I guess if you feel like what a stranger does could potentially impact your ability to get into heaven, then maybe. But I don't know. The part about, like, you know, the more good I do, the more likely I am to win favor with God. That makes me uncomfortable because it's like, do you genuinely, you know, because one thing that we were very heavily taught in church is that God knows your heart, right?
Yeah.
Right? So you can do all of this stuff and it doesn't matter. You can do all of this good, all of this charity, but if your heart is not, you know, not necessarily, I mean, I guess pure, but, you know, I don't believe anybody's heart is pure. So if your heart is not, if you're not trying to be pure or whatever, working toward that, God is aware of that. It doesn't matter how much work you do. So that, I guess maybe that's why it makes me a little bit uncomfortable, because that part does speak to a past or former version of me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, bringing it back to the fourth situation, like, I think that one thing that, I think that we always have kind of stuff going on in the country because our country is very tumultuous politically and socially.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that this 4th of July is, like I was telling you before we started recording, particularly ironic to me given, you know, everything that's happening around immigration, and it's like what we're actually celebrating for the 4th of July, if you buy into this, is that we are an independent nation, right? Independent from colonial rule, from Great Britain or whatever. So we're like, it was basically started by a country of immigrants celebrating their freedom from a colonial power. And now a country founded on immigrants, founded by immigrants, is opposing immigration.
Yeah.
And it's just, and like, have a president that is like actively, like you talked about in the No segment, right? Actively trying to raise money to build a wall to prevent immigrants. Like, this is happening while we are celebrating the 4th of July.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. A president who I think his parents or grandparents were immigrants.
And his wives.
Married to an immigrant.
Yeah.
Like it just.
Both of his wives, I think.
I don't understand.
Yeah. I mean.
I don't understand.
Cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
People just ignore the stuff that they don't, that contradicts their beliefs so that they can continue living in the belief that they're comfortable with.
And then it's like, and then too, you know, to complicate this a little bit more, because there's someone that had said to Maurice that, like, oh, I don't have a problem with all immigration. It's just illegal immigration.
Yeah, 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 I hear that.
And it's also not a race thing. It's not, like, I don't have a problem with Mexicans necessarily. It's just anybody that immigrates here illegally. And it's like, okay, well, one, when your ancestors came over on the, what are they, the Pinta, I can't remember.
The Nia and the Pinta and the Santa Maria.
Yeah, whenever they came over on those three boats, they didn't come here legally.
Mm-hmm. No one did.
Yeah, it's like you came here. Your ancestors came here and demanded this land, and then put rules on it.
Yeah,
like that's like I go into somebody's house and it's like, all right, this is my house now, and the rule is that you can't be here.
Yeah.
What? Like, it doesn't make any sense. The rule is that you can't be here, or you can be here and you get to live in the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my rule. You get, so this is what, 1,000 square feet? You get 100. And now the rest of the house is mine, and I get to decide who comes and goes. Oh, your mom's coming to visit later? No, now she's, like, illegally trespassing on my property. That you stole. Like, that, literally, that is the way that this country, like, was founded.
Yeah.
And yet it makes sense to people to say, like, well, there are rules, there are laws. Yes, people that came here, quote-unquote illegally, made those rules and laws. I mean, it's, like, so elementary and yet so complicated for everybody, it seems like.
Yeah.
Ooh, child. I just, like, my blood pressure just rose a little bit. I don't know. But yet, so, like we were saying, you know, what does it mean what does it mean to be American? What does it mean to be independent and free?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of those things mean different, they mean different things for different groups.
Yeah.
Like, we don't all live in the same America.
Yeah.
You know, like, we all inhabit this land, this country, but it's, like, our experiences are so different. Like, if I get pulled over and I get out of my car without a cop telling me to, I could potentially get shot.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were white, that would not be the case.
Yeah.
I could get out of my car without a cop telling me. I could walk up to a police car and confront the cop and ask them why they pulled me over, and I wouldn't be shot.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I don't know. So I got mixed feelings about it. I mean, now that I'm sitting here thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, so to leave this
in a brighter note,
on a positive note, So the way that I, like, to me, like, what is freedom? What am I going to celebrate? How do I make the best out of this country? And so, you know, I'm an immigrant. My partner is not. My partner has completely different views from me. He's very conservative. He believes that, you know, he would support your friends saying, you know, I agree with immigration, but not illegal immigration, or we should only get the best. And like,
who
there should be
the best?
Like, there should be merit. Like, that makes sense. Like, make sure people have, you know, the best of each country should come. And so we definitely differ on a lot of things. But we both are together. We've been together for almost a decade.
Wow.
Yeah. We have a child together, and it is very hard. Like, just now.
Yeah, I want to know how you, like, how do you?
It's taken, like, 7 years to get to a point where at first we would lie to each other. And if we disagreed, we just wouldn't say it. We would say it in our groups and then, like, just be like, yeah. Then we got to a point where we just couldn't finish a conversation. We would have to, one of us would, like, literally walk out. It was so heated. Someone had to leave. And now we're at a point where we had to set ground rules, which is one, no one's allowed to interrupt.
Okay, that's good.
You're not allowed to make disparaging remarks about anything. Yeah. So even if it's offensive to me, if I tell you it's offensive, even if you don't think it's offensive, I told him how the use of the word illegals is actually offensive to me. Mm-hmm. And he's like, but it's not a racial term. And I explained to him, well, it actually is. Yeah. I was like, it is. It's a way to say something negative about it. It's a word that's used negatively to put down a group that I was a part of.
Yeah.
So that's not allowed to be in our arguments. And if those words start to be used, then the argument can end. And then three is, like, we have to remember, like, it's not about winning a debate. It's about, you know, us trying to understand each other.
Yeah.
And it's taken, like, 7 years to get to each. And even now, we just had, like, even when we have conversations about topics that happen, it's still really hard. And if you want the best practice, do this on the way somewhere. Because you can't leave. You're in a car, and you can't physically leave, and you have to work through it. And then our final rule is, we're not allowed to... If we get into a discussion about something and it becomes an argument because our feelings, you know, it got too personal and too real, then we're not allowed to, like, we have to minimize and make the argument as short as possible. Mm-hmm. So we don't get to just do what we did, which would be like an argument could last a whole day.
Yeah.
Where I'm going to go to bed here, you go to bed there. I'm not going to speak to you for 24 hours and I'm going to punish you. And so once we got to that point, it's like, it's interesting because I can say all these things that I feel, he can say all these things that I feel, and people are just like, when they see that he's with me, they're like, but you think this. Yeah. How can you be with someone who was an undocumented immigrant? How can you be with someone? And it's just like, even in these discussions, because we don't call them debates anymore, in these discussions, I teach him something. Mm-hmm. So he knows about the immigration process because of my experience. Mm-hmm. So when he says people should do it the right way, he doesn't say that anymore because he knows the right way takes 20 years. So what does he say? The immigration process needs to be better.
Yeah.
And so it's like, and it takes a long time. And only in a country like this, because I do have friends who have family in Cuba, in Venezuela, even in Mexico, where my mom said that, you know, you weren't allowed to say things negatively about the government. Like, I do recognize that I get to live in a space and a country where I can be with someone who has completely different views from me, and we can have a child together and still love each other and still care about each other and still learn from each other, still get very angry with each other, but, like, we're a couple. And it's just, there aren't a lot of countries where you would be able to do that.
Right.
And that's what I like about this country is, not everyone that I know has the same beliefs as me. I need people to have the same beliefs as me, or else I would go crazy. But it makes me learn from people, and I feel like they learn from me too. So that's kind of like the positive I want to put in. And it's like, yes, my experience of this country is very different from his, and it's really shitty and it's really hard. And I think my experience is harder, and a lot of times it's not fair, and a lot of times I get very resentful and angry. But I'm also very grateful that I'm able to be in a country where I did find a partner that is so different from me, but it's like the main thing that is holding us together is our love for each other. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I can celebrate on my July 4th.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, trying to find that positive thing about this country and about what you want to celebrate and about your ability to voice your dissatisfaction. And even if it's like, my life's not getting better, it's, we're in a, you know, in our shout out, like with Tiffany, like we're in a place where we can see a little bit of progress, yeah, or do a little bit of change or a little bit of difference. And, you know, maybe if that means trying to reach out to that one person that you really care about that you haven't been talking to because it's been so frustrating to have different opinions, or if you and your partner, your boyfriend, your fiance don't agree on certain topics and you guys have just decided you're not going to talk about them, then maybe do talk about them and learn from each other. And because, you know, for me, a part of this country is everyone's allowed to have a voice. I believe everyone's allowed to have a voice, even, yeah, if I disagree with yours. Now, your opinion shouldn't infringe on mine, but I believe that we both can have them. Yeah. Kind of some semi-positive that, you know, I wanted to share on this July 4th episode that I've kind of reframed for myself. So that's what I'm going to celebrate.
Yeah, I can say that, you know, so, I mean, I don't know what the vibe is or what people's perception of me is, but I mean, I guess generally, like, I would say I don't hate this country. I hate hatred. So I hate racism, I hate sexism, I hate homophobia, I hate transphobia, I hate all of these things, right? So I think that this country, for certain people, is probably the best that it would get in the world.
Yeah.
But because not everyone has equal treatment in the country, I think that the country needs to do better. Yeah. So if we were all, like, say we were all treated like black men, right? Or say we were all treated like undocumented immigrants, then it'd be like, oh, this country, the experience of this country is the same for everybody.
Yeah.
So yeah, there would be room for improvement, but it's like, at least we're all fighting together for the same cause, for better treatment. But because there's so much inequality and there's so much difference in the way that people are treated, that is what I hate.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, because it's reinforced and perpetuated by the government and by the people that are treated the best, so like the 1%, wealthy people, even like freaking middle class white folks, you know, because those are the folks that benefit the most from the way that the country operates, and because they have, you know, they have a vested interest in keeping it this way. And it makes sense, because it's like there's only there, from their perspective, there's only so much that can go around.
Yeah.
So if everybody has access to it, then there's that means less for me. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that's what I hate. I hate inequality. Mm-hmm. Now, if the country didn't have that, and like I said, we were all treated, you know, the same or whatever, then there'd be nothing to complain about. But until everybody is, and not just my people, but like people in general, like I don't want, you know, I don't know who's at the bottom of the totem pole, poor black trans women. Like, until those people are
disabled.
Oh my God. Yes. Throw disabled in there. Like, until those people are treated, the way that a straight, wealthy, white man would be treated, then I think that the country needs to do better. But, I mean, the fact that, like you're saying, like, I get to vocalize this opinion, I could go put this opinion on Instagram or Twitter right now and not face any repercussions beyond maybe some people being hateful in my comments.
Yeah.
Like, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's like, lest we not forget that lots of my ancestors had to die for me to have that right. Mm-hmm. So I also hate that, you know, it wasn't like this right was just given to me.
Yeah.
So when people say like, you need to be appreciative of the fact that you can even do this, it's like, I myself did not earn this right.
Yeah.
Like, my ancestors paid the price for me to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's kind of my take on America.
That's why I love doing this podcast, because it's like, even though we're both in the same program, we're both like women, like, it's just people have different experiences and people have different perspectives, and that's all going to be shaped by what happened to you, by your ancestors, by your communities, by the people you love, the people that love you. And so that's why I really appreciate, you know, our listeners and, you know, you and me just sharing and talking. So if you guys have any feedback, if you guys want to join in, please email us.
Please.
At woke.ishpodcast at gmail.com. I feel like no one ever emails us. Although,
yeah, I feel like we're nice, right?
I don't but know, I would generally. Never email. So maybe Instagram. Like, DM us. Yeah. We'll check.
Or yeah, I've been listening to some podcasts for years, and I have never.
That's true. I've never written an email. So I'll give you a pass on the email. But definitely DM us. You know, we like to post videos throughout the week on our Instagram, Wokeish Podcast. Go ahead and, you know, follow us and give us a like. Or if you don't like something that we said, say it in our comments. We always love hearing, like we said, different views. Even if it's a view, even if you disagree with us, we'll still, you know, want to hear you out and talk to you. But thank you so much for listening. Have a good July 4th, however it is that you celebrate. And be safe.
Good food.
Yeah, eat good food. Be safe. Spend time with people you love. Mm-hmm. And until next week.
Bye.
Bye.